Welcome back to ICUP with We.
This is still an ICP podcast by a new listener and an old fan from back in the day.
Believe it or not, I am still Aaron.
And I am still Eric.
And today we are finally reviewing 1997's The Great Milenko.
You're listening to the ICUP with We podcast.
The Great Milenko. Milenko.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back from this long, felt like a long time hiatus. We are back with ICUP with We, talking some Great Milenko. I am not alone. As always, I am with my co-host with the co-most, Eric. Eric, how are you?
I am doing pretty well, man. Thank you for asking. This episode was, we tried to record it. I'm going to say what was it, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but we ran into some technical issues. And then I was moving, so we had to take some time off. But now we're finally back at it, and I'm feeling good about it. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, the 3 weeks, I believe it was 3 weeks.
Yeah.
The 3 weeks off were strange to me. I already had recording this podcast on, like, late Sunday mornings just ingrained in my memory. The first weekend... So the first weekend we recorded, halfway through the recording, Discord, the app that we use to communicate, made Eric's voice sound like he was going through a voice changer, and we did not know how to fix
like
it.
This. It was really fucking weird.
Yeah. Literally, Eric did not know what was happening.
I didn't. You were like, dude, are you fucking with me right now? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I was like, bro, you have to be using a voice changer. Or no, I thought you were in the middle of a yawn. For like 5 minutes.
Like, are you yawning right now?
You're in the middle of a 5 minute long yawn, is what it sounded like. But okay, so that was the first week. Second week, I wake up on Sunday. I'm going about my business and I think, man, this is like, do I not have anything to do today? Like, this is weird. I feel like I should be doing something. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Eric's in the middle of moving. We're not recording the podcast. And then this past Sunday, I thought, damn, hell yeah, I'm getting up, I'm making a big-ass breakfast, Moose and I are going to go on for a long-ass walk, fantastic morning. It was great. All while you were stressfully moving across the country. I had a relaxing couple weekends.
You know what, though? We had a good move, everything is good, and now I am up here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest, so we are recording across the country, but I feel like we're as close as we ever were.
Oh, absolutely. And we are we're recording this on a Tuesday night, which is weird for us. Also, so our regular noon Central Standard Time recording, how's that going to affect you from now on Sundays?
I'm going to be good. That's 10 a.m. for me. That feels good for a Sunday.
10 a.m. That feels pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Golly, that time difference. So... during our hiatus, I've gotten a couple emails from our podcast hosting company just to give us some fan updates.
Buzzsprout, shout out to Buzzsprout for being the most amazing podcast distribution service. Seriously, they're so easy and so wonderful to use.
I found it. And this one says our podcast received 28 downloads last week. This is after 2 weeks of not... episode. Yeah, exactly. This is 2 weeks after not posting anything. Yes, the second email that we got was 250 all-time downloads.
250. I think that's awesome because I think probably 249 are like our close family and friends.
Probably.
But with no real advertising or promotion, it's amazing that we are getting... such awesome numbers and downloads. So thank you to everybody that has listened and downloaded. It means a lot to us because we love doing this and it makes it so much more worthwhile and feels more justified when we know people actually give a shit.
Oh, for sure. And I do want to clarify one statement that you made when you said friends and family. I'm just going to go ahead and say just friends. I'm positive my family doesn't listen to this, nor would they want to.
No, I don't think any of my family is listening to
this. But yeah, a lot of it is our friends and we love that. But for for two nobodies like the two of us to have even small podcasting numbers like 250 downloads is astronomical for us because we haven't, you're right, advertised or done anything like that with it. So thank you guys so much for listening and caring. If you care enough, leave us a review on whatever app that you use to listen to this. That'd be fantastic.
We would love it.
We would love it. So Eric, we have a lot to get into today.
So much to get into.
Let's go ahead and hop right into the bullshit and say, what's going on in 1997? What were some of the biggest hip-hop releases? This was definitely a big year for hip-hop. Rap went super mainstream in 1997. Let's look at these chart positions here.
Yeah, I think, you know, we for a few years have been building up. Hip-hop and rap have been exploding. But when you look at this year, this year was a year where hip hop and rap were dominating the charts. So we had Scarface with The Untouchable debuted at number one on Billboard. Then Notorious B.I.G. Life After Death featuring songs like Hypnotize and Mo Money, Mo Problems. Again, number one on Billboard, certified diamond, not even multiple platinum, diamond release. Absolutely. This one actually dropped 2 months after he died. That's a huge release for somebody that's not even alive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a massive relief release for somebody. I almost said massive relief. it is not a massive relief that he died. That was a very bad thing. Mm-mm. But massive release for somebody who is not alive.
You know, the interesting thing, though, I think Notorious B.I.G. was on such an upward trajectory that undoubtedly his death brought some attention and sales to that record, but I think that thing was going to be huge anyway with iconic tracks on it like that. So
You know, and you hear a lot about artists, not just hip-hop artists, that have big releases after they pass away because of the hype, you know, that gathered because they passed away. And so that's why actually in Ballista, we're thinking about actually sacrificing one of us a month before we release that EP. And I think the only reason we're not a worldwide name right now is because none of us wanted to bite the bullet and quite literally bite the bullet.
I mean, there's some real truth to that. I mean, that's solid logic. And I'm not going to lie, man. Anybody who has ever been in a band or writes music, I don't believe you if you say that thought has never crossed your mind.
Oh, for sure.
Because it definitely has.
If there's one piece of advice that me and Eric could give to all of you young musicians out there, it's write music, die, and then have somebody release it for you.
Yeah. Or fake your death.
Or you could fake your death. That's true.
Right.
Actually, that's kind of funny. Have you ever seen the TV show Trailer Park Boys?
I have not.
So there's this rapper called J-Rock that lives in the trailer park. And right before he released like a mixtape, he actually faked going to jail so that when the mixtape released, it would sell more copies because people would think that he was hard. And so he hid under a trailer. He like brought a TV down and like a couch and a bed and like dug out under a trailer and like, they found out that that's where he was living for like 6 months and instead of in jail.
We didn't do any of the right stuff prior to releasing our records this year.
Absolutely.
We did all the wrong shit.
We absolutely did. And anyway, you know what? We digress. You know, Life After Death isn't the only banger that got released in 1997.
No. We had Wu-Tang Forever by Wu-Tang Clan. And speaking of Notorious B.I.G., that same year, we had Puff Daddy and the Family released No Way Out, another one that debuted at number one on Billboard, went seven times platinum. Listen to the singles that were on this record. Victory, Been Around the World, It's All About the Benjamins, I'll Be Missing You, Can't Nobody Hold Me Down. Like Puff Daddy or not, those are unavoidable hits, man.
God,
those
the,
are
big the fact tracks. That those were all on one record.
Right?
That's insane to me.
That is insane. I mean,
he put on a fucking performance when he recorded.
Sure did.
This.
I mean, I think you might venture to say that the untimely and unfortunate passing of Notorious B.I.G. is the best thing that ever could have happened to Puff Daddy, taking him from, you know, producer to superstar.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. But also that year, Missy Elliott dropped Supa Dupa Fly. Again, hit number three on Billboard, went platinum. Master P dropped Ghetto D with the track Make 'em Say, That one debuted at number one on Billboard, went three times platinum.
Crazy.
One of my favorite Wu-Tang spinoffs, Gravediggas, released The Pick, The Sickle, and The Shovel. Busta Rhymes dropped Disaster Strikes with Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Could See and Dangerous. Mm. That one debuted at number three and went platinum. Jay-Z dropped In My Lifetime Volume 1, another one that hit number three on Billboard and went platinum. Mystical dropped Unpredictable. Will Smith dropped Big Willie Style featuring Getting Jiggy With It, Miami, Just the Two of Us, and Men in Black.
Oh, geez.
Nine times platinum. Nine times.
Absolutely insane.
Wonder if that was about the same time that Jada Pinkett was dating somebody else. Did you see all that stuff in the news about all that craziness?
Was in the news about, recently?
Right now, currently in the news, there's some kind of chaos about. For a while, they were in a they had just basically considered their marriage was over, but they were still married.
Technically,
so she
married,
was
yeah.
for years. Apparently in a relationship with somebody else, but now that's over and Jada and Will are back together. I don't know.
God, could you imagine being the guy that says, yeah, I'm fucking Will Smith's wife?
Apparently he had a conversation with Will Smith and Will Smith was like, I'm cool with this. It's like, we're just, you know, marriage is over. So I don't care. You're cool with it.
That's incredible. Yeah, I need to read more up on that. That's insane. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. Anyway, back to 1997.
Yeah,
we had Timbaland and Magoo with Welcome to Our World. Tupac released Are You Still Down? And then in parentheses, Remember Me. So let me talk about this one for just a second. It
Absolutely.
Debuted at number two on Billboard. It mm-hmm. went four times platinum, but he released five albums while he was alive. Mm-hmm. And seven albums after he died. This was the second one he released after he died. Five more released after this.
That's crazy.
Right?
I mean, to have That's that crazy. Amount of backlogged music.
I know. It's wild.
Like, I can't even stand having music for like 2 months that has not been released.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Songs, get them out. Let's release
yeah, we're
them
like,
right
hey,
now.
We paid to record these and now they're just sitting here. Get them out now.
Yes, absolutely. And then there's one more release I want to talk about that mm-hmm. hit in 1997. Bone Thugs and Harmony, The Art of War, with the tracks Look Into My Eyes and If I Could Teach the World, debuted at number one, went four times platinum. I want anybody that's listening to this to please, please go look up the video, the official video for If I Could Teach the World on YouTube, because it is maybe one of the worst and strangest videos I have ever seen. Like the most like doesn't align with the tone of the song in any way. And I want to know how it's possible that this soft ass song with this goofy ass video is possibly from the same artist who just a few years earlier dropped songs like No Surrender.
I'll
did
post
you,
the
did
YouTube.
You see that?
I did. So I saw it when you first sent me this email. I should have rewatched it before we start recording.
It's so weird.
It's absolutely insane. I'll post the YouTube link on Twitter whenever we release this episode.
Hell yes.
So that way y'all don't have to go searching for it. But yeah, weird. weird.
Yeah. We also, if we want to get a quick snapshot of Detroit in the year 1997, mm-hmm. we had some of the usual suspects. We had Isham dropped Bruce Wayne, Gotham City, 1987. That's really the name of the album. Bruce Wayne, Gotham City, 1987.
Amazing.
Nodus, which is Satan spelled backwards, and Isham is part of that group, released Multi-Killionaire, The Devil's Contract. Twisted released their debut album called Most Tasteless. This one actually hit 149 on the Billboard 200. Keep in mind, this album was released independently through Psychopathic. There was no partnership or distribution through Hollywood or any other label. So that right there gives you a feel for the power that ICP had even at that point to help propel an unknown artist with, you know, minimal distribution to 149 on the chart at all on the Billboard 200. That's pretty big.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And then one more. Eminem dropped the Slim Shady EP, not the LP. This was a couple years before the LP. But it did have tracks on it that appeared on the final LP and actually his second album as well. So there you go. 1997.
Huge year. Huge year.
Yes. Yes.
So let's go ahead and move on here. As you know, we are in the part of the podcast where we talk about the info behind the release of ICP. So there's a lot to talk about here with the great Malenko. So without further ado, Eric, let's get into it.
There is so much to this story. There should be a documentary just about what happened here. It would be interesting to watch whether you like ICP or not. So we were talking about when Riddlebox came out, they had signed a deal with Jive and that deal fell apart. They didn't support them. They didn't distribute the album. ICP's manager, Alex Abyss, immediately started negotiating deals with other labels. Mm-hmm. Well, a rep from Hollywood Records was apparently a fan of ICP and really wanted to sign them. They reportedly paid $1 million to buy ICP's contract out from Jive, which is crazy because Jive gave them $60,000 and that was it to release their last album. And so they said, yeah, let's do this. And they immediately started recording what would become The Great Malenko in 1996. Mm-hmm. The album, the name of it, Violent J came up with it based on the name of a professional wrestler that went by the name of Dean Malenko. He thought that the name Malenko had a cool carnival kind of sound. So he just changed the spelling and added the great before it. So it became The Great Malenko. And he thought he came up with something completely unique. Later, once the album released, finding out that Dean's father was also a wrestler that wrestled under the name Boris the Great Malenko. So let's talk about the album itself. This album includes a lot of features. Two of the main ones would be Deb Egoli from the Gorgor Girls, which is a punk band from Detroit, and Legs Diamond, both of them each on numerous tracks. You hear their voices all over the album. It adds a ton of value to this record, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but there are also several really high-profile features from people like Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols, Slash from Guns N' Roses, and Alice Cooper. Apparently, when ICP was talking to Hollywood, they said, we want famous rock stars featured on our album. So Julian Raymond, one of the A&R reps for Hollywood, reached out to his contacts. Apparently, Slash was already a fan of ICP, so all he asked for in return was a bottle of something called Wild Irish Rose, which I assume is whiskey.
Yeah, I think it is.
And then George Clinton apparently also recorded a feature, but I guess what they recorded didn't really fit or make sense on the album, so it never made it on.
Well, and actually, I don't know if you noticed this, but there is a very small feature from another Clinton on the album.
No, I don't know if I did.
Yeah, Bill Clinton. You could hear very faintly, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Really?
No.
Is it when it's, I was going to say, there is a part where they're flipping through channels and you're hearing news clips, and I wondered if it was in there.
That would have been incredible if it was.
It would have been perfect and
it
timely.
It would have been very timely, too. Yeah, I was going to say. No, I just thought I'd bring out my terrible Bill Clinton impression and bring the conversation to a grinding halt.
Yeah, but we'll pick this back up. All right.
Absolutely.
We talked about how they got on the label, recording of the album, features. So now the album is finished, right? Yes. And it ends up in the hands of Hollywood Records executives. Thing to consider here, Hollywood's parent company was Disney. So these are Disney people that have an ICP album in their hands. In 1997, before this, you know, group had hit big and everybody knew what they were really unhappy with the album. They didn't like the lyrical content in several of the songs. In order for Disney to release the album, they insisted that three songs that they found particularly offensive be completely removed and that the lyrics for Piggy Pie be changed to remove violent lyrics and lyrics about killing cops. You can actually hear the original version of the song Piggy Pie, old school on Forgotten Freshness, super violent. I don't know if I'd say it's much better. I have a note that says it's better. I think it's different. I think it's cool. Both songs have value. I think they did a good job of finding ways to keep it violent and still stick it to Disney and go, we're going to say whatever we want, even if you don't realize we are. But the songs that got cut off the album were called The Ned and Game, Under the Moon, and Boogie Woogie Woo. Surprisingly to me, I would have thought they'd tell them to go fuck off, but ICP was like, okay, we'll do it if that's what it takes to get the album put out. So the album dropped on June 24th, 1997. Initially, 100,000 copies were shipped out to stores. And on release day, ICP was in a store, I believe in Hollywood, doing an album signing. Commercials had started running on TV to promote the album. They were getting ready to head out on a 25-city tour, which was pretty big for them considering the tours that they had done before. Unfortunately, at this exact same time, Disney found themselves in the midst of some controversy with the Southern Baptist Church, who were protesting Disney for hosting Gay Days at Disneyland and also for distributing the television sitcom Ellen, which had gay themes. The church claimed that Disney was, in quotes, turning its back on family values. So in a panic, Disney ordered the album be pulled from stores only hours after it released, worried that this would be one more thing for protesters to get angry about. And Disney demanded that sales immediately cease and all copies of the album be shipped back. Within that few hours that it had released, there were enough fans waiting for it to drop. The 18,000 copies sold, which made it chart at 63 on the Billboard 200. So it was late. So when all this shit went down, all of a sudden, other record labels were like, well, wait a minute. This is in the news. These guys are charting. We want it. So Interscope and Geffen immediately attempted to sign them. Mm-hmm. But ICP ultimately opted to go with Island because they not only offered to re-release Great Malenko with the extra songs added back in that had been cut off, but they also offered a distribution deal to re-release several previous ICP albums.
Amazing. Amazing. You know, it kind of worked out in ICP's favor that happened. That was a happy accident that kind of launched them a little bit.
There had to have been a moment in the midst of it where they were going, what the fuck? Although I did see a funny thing where Violent J was talking about it. And he's like, you'd think we would have been really upset at that point. But the thing Disney didn't stop to consider is, they had already paid us. They had already given us $1 million. So they pulled the album and we already had the money.
Yeah.
So we were able to turn around and make this deal with Island and get it out. So on August 12th of that year, the album re-released. This time it had cover art in four different colors, red, green, purple, and gold. Each color included a different secret message inside the package that would help reveal the name of the fifth Joker's card, which they were really thinking ahead at this point. So it really turns out, like you said, Island made a good choice. Within 9 months, the album went gold. Within a year, it went platinum. The album spawned four official music videos and a one-hour TV special called Shockumentary, which Island paid to air on MTV in December of that year. And with all the controversy in the news, with the re-releases, with the TV special, this was the point where ICP blew the fuck up.
So there's definitely an alternate reality where the Southern Baptist Church organization does not exist.
Yeah,
that is a better reality.
Yes.
So there was a reality where ICP was never dropped from Hollywood Records, which means they were tied with Disney for longer than what it seems like 5 minutes. Which means there's an alternate reality where some little kid is sitting there watching a live action version of Cinderella and Under the Moon comes on. Or Piggy Pie comes on.
All these things are like a potential reality. Imagine if they had stayed on Hollywood and they had had a long relationship with Disney, because if there's one thing I know about Disney, they love money. And the second that album took off and they started banking, they would have been like, okay, let's keep these guys, you know, under the Disney umbrella. What if for, you know, 20 years they were releasing albums for Disney and progressively becoming more family and Disney friendly? What if there was an animated Disney ICP TV show or movie?
Oh, I'd love it.
It'd be wild.
What if there was a Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J walk around character at Disney World?
Oh, I wish there
now
was,
that
dude.
Is that is something that I would love.
That would be amazing.
What if you could buy ICP merch at Disney World?
Like official Disney ICP merch.
Official Disney ICP merch. That is something that we will always be wondering what if. And unfortunately, unless we can figure out how to travel to another dimension, we're never going to find out.
No, we need to do that Rick and Morty, like have one of those dimensional portal guns where we could go to the dimension where ICP maintained a good relationship with Disney.
Dude, you know what? I would even settle for, and I'm not a Rick and Morty fan, but I would even settle for Dan Harmon writing an episode of Rick and Morty where they travel to an alternate reality that Disney still owned ICP and all this stuff happened in the Rick and Morty TV show. I would settle for that.
I'll tell you what, Dan Harmon is a brilliant writer.
Absolutely.
But you've got these two guys here that have a whole concept. We both also happen to be writers like Dan Harmon. If you want to collab on this concept, we'd be happy to get in on it.
We will throw you a bone, Dan Harmon.
Yeah,
we will do you a favor.
And depending on what you're into, we will bone you and do you as well.
I'm fine with that, Dan Harmon. I have so much respect for you as a writer. I will fuck the shit out of you.
Yeah, totally your call, man. If you don't want it, we don't want it. But if you do, hey, we're there.
We will definitely. You know what? My wife is such a huge fan of Dan Harmon that she would absolutely let me too. So hey. I'm A-okay on that front.
All right. This happens and half really hope it doesn't.
Yeah. I think I think the feeling's mutual here.
Yes.
And I'm sure Dan Harmon just fully hopes it does not.
He's not into this.
So, Dan Harmon, wet dreams aside, what were your overall thoughts on The Great Malenko?
What were my overall thoughts? Well, you know, I listened to this one a lot back when it released. I picked up the original copy before it got pulled from shelves on day one. And listening back now, man, this is a good album. I feel like every aspect of it is trying to take what worked on Riddlebox and one-up it, which I think has been their progress consistently all the way along. Okay, here's what worked on this album. How do we take that and make it better? And I think sometimes those things work really well on this one. There's a couple places where I don't think it works great, but with that said, I think it'd be hard not to consider this their most solid overall release to this point. There really aren't any bad tracks. The album feels like a really hungry major label debut from an act that's been grinding for 7 years. The tone is aggressive. The social commentary is full force. There's some dark and serious tracks. There's some fucking dumb tracks. Production and mix, the best so far. Super solid.
Oh, for sure. You know, I think, like you said, this is a major release from a very hungry musical act.
Yeah.
And the production value is fantastic. They didn't cheap out. They didn't cheap out on the production value of the skits. Those are up to par with the production value of the music. And I think you're right. That it's very easy to say that this is the most solid release from them so far.
Yeah. I mean, I love Riddlebox. And I probably like it even more than Malenko, but it's hard for me to take anything away from what this release was, what it did for them, the significance that it played in pop culture at the time. And just listening back now, like, tracks are good tracks, man.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right on that. So let's go ahead and go track by track here, huh?
Let's do it.
So the first one is the intro track featuring mm-hmm. Alice Cooper. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think they have a formula for Joker's cards. This is part of the formula. I think for me, this is the best intro track they've had. I don't really give a fuck about Alice Cooper's music particularly, but he's pretty dope on this track. I love his voice. I love his delivery. They're leaning hard into the concept of Joker's cards and the end of the world. I think it's funny. I think it's kind of scary and clever. I dug it. What about you?
I think it was fine. Yeah, like you said, they have a formula, and the formula is let's lay out what the Joker's cards, like, let's put some dialogue in here to catch people up on what a Joker's card is, how many there will be, and, you know, just the general background info that new listeners would need, which is smart. You know, they've done this on every Joker's card, but definitely smart to do it on this one, since this was a major release and tons of new fans were going to come in.
Yeah, they had a tough thing to do here. They had to balance between giving more of the lore and what their longtime listeners had expected, but also somehow making this understandable and accessible to new listeners. I think they did a decent job of that with this intro and the next track, Great Milenko.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I liked the jukebox kind of thing where, you know, the jukebox messed up. It says this very creepy message about the Great Milenko and the Joker's cards. And then he's like, this damn thing, Marianne, what the hell is wrong with this music box? Marianne says, don't mind that old thing, honey. It does that all the time.
Yeah.
It's just the ignorance of what is to come.
They're just not listening. Like, the message is right there in front of you. You're hearing it. Just ignore it. I feel like that applies right now.
Oh, for sure.
To the world. I also love that they use the term to refer to the jukebox. They refer juke machine and music box. I think that's hilarious.
This goddamn juke machine. So let's move on to the title track, Great Milenko.
Yep.
I'll go ahead and start off. This one I knew was just going to be an extension of the intro because, like we've said, they have a formula for these things. Mm-hmm. Production value was incredible. It was great, you know, and I was very happy with the production value. I tend to get annoyed when they split these things into two tracks that could just be one track. But it was only, a minute 56. So it's whatever.
Of all their intros and first tracks, these two flow together so seamlessly.
Oh, they very much so do. Yeah.
They easily could have put this as one track.
You know, and you could have absentmindedly listened and assumed that it was one track.
Yeah. Beat's cool though. It's a cool track. I dig it. I like what it is.
Yes, agreed. Not too much else to say on this one. So let's move on to track number three, which is Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I feel like, well, we'll just say this. This is the first actual song. Not that there isn't music in those first two tracks, but this is the first one. Hey, I'm going to listen to a song. This is what you'd probably skip to. I think this is a good first song. It reminds me of a track like Murder Go Round or The Show Must Go On. It's got a similar tone. There's some great lines in it. They actually did a remix of it called The Headhunter's Edit, which had an official video. And if you've never seen the video, it's totally worth watching. It's pretty fun. But I think this is a cool track, man. There's one line that really stands out. Shaggy Too Dope says, call me a psycho schizo freak and I'll call you by your name. And we had a debate on this. I believe the name he says is Dick Ass, but there's also a school of thought that believes that it's Dick Anus. I don't know.
Yes, it was. So it's annotated on genius.com as Dick Anus, but it could go either way.
Yeah, honestly. Either way, it's funny. Dick Ass is hilarious to me.
Dick Ass is a hilarious term. So there are some good lines in here. The beat is super cool. Love the beat. Still, at this point, during like my first listen, I still was blown away by the fucking production of this album.
Yeah.
Was fantastic. Too Dope's verse is too dope, is something that I wrote down. I loved that verse. I wasn't a huge fan of the bridge.
I agree. I've always wondered why that was there. It doesn't fit. That's the part where he's doing clown dog.
Yeah.
Joker dog. And I'm like, why is this doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And it kind of brought the vibe to a halt for me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And that's not just the first time I listened through. That was literally all. I listened to this album four times.
Yeah, since, I don't think it kills the song, but it doesn't help the song in any way.
It doesn't kill it for me. It's still a great song, but it brings the vibes to a grinding halt. And then,
yeah,
thankfully, there's a third verse to bring you back into it.
Yeah, for sure.
And a hook there at the end. But they did shout out the homies in verse 3.
Yeah.
Tall Jess, Jump Seti, Nate the Mac. Speaking
of shouting out the homies,
yes.
I think we need to give a little credit. Not that this is the first time we're doing this, but Mike Clark is the sole producer along with Legs Diamond doing some of the stuff on this. Man, all these tracks, there's so many of them that sound so different, but they all sound great. The mix is great. Oh, yeah. Like Mike Clark killed it on this record.
He just gonna say brought that. His A game. I agree. I don't really have anything too much else to say about this one. It's a good song.
What did you think of the back puns? Because they both start, both Violet J and Shaggy start their first verses, yes. With back puns. I'm back like a vertebrae and I'm back like back scoliosis. Like
scoliosis. Yeah, that's actually, that was something that was super, super funny to me. I think it was pretty good. So the full line here is abracadabra, boom, shock-a-day, I'm Violent J, and I'm back like a vertebrae. Then Shaggy, yeah. Two Dopes is Shazam, bam, shaka-laka, Loki, Shaggy the clown, back like scoliosis.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny.
Obvious but awesome.
Yes, obvious but awesome. So I'm ready. We can go ahead and move on to track number 4, which is Pity Pie. So this is a song with the controversial lines in it that that Disney made them replace and or take out completely.
Yeah, there are multiple lines that were changed, but Shaggy's whole verse got changed in it. The whole second verse, I think. Mm-hmm. This song features Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols on guitar.
Yes.
Which is kind of an interesting thing, you know, a punk legend recording guitar. And I'll say I really dig the guitar tone on this song. It's pretty aggressive.
Great. It's great. It's super aggressive. I've wrote in all caps. There are some riffs. Holy shit.
Yeah. yeah. The track is mean. The beat is dope.
Oh, yeah. So the skit production has been upped as well. This is where I first kind of noticed the upped skit production.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the track?
Yes. The song is about turning different people who are shitty or have wronged them into pigs, which was pretty cool. So the first piggy was a racist. The second piggy was the judge that convicted Shaggy Two Dope.
Mm-hmm.
The third piggy was rich people.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get the feeling listening to this? It's its own identity, you know, it's got its own identity, it's its own thing, but I have a note, it's like Chicken Hunting Part 2.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, this is, it's just aggressive, it's hunting down and killing these, you know, objectively evil people, and it's pretty cool. There's one line that I think hits really hard. It's when Shaggy is talking about being in the courtroom with the judge and he's got a sawed-off shotgun under his clothes and he pulls it out and he shoots the judge and he says, I racked on the bucket, made it fucking rain pork rinds. And I was like, that's so fucking
hard.
That was
so good.
It's so hard.
So fucking good. Yeah, no, they have some feelings about these types of people and they know how to say them.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Skit at the end, the suicide hotline skit, again, not annotated, but I loved it. It was really funny.
Dude, it's not funny at all, and yet it's fucking hilarious.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so the concept of a suicide hotline is not funny, but the way they did this was very funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I thought it was pretty funny. I still think it's pretty funny. I thought it was then. I think it is now. So,
oh yeah, let's go ahead and move on to the next song.
How many times? Dude, I fucking love this beat. I always have, and listening to it now, man, it really hits hard. I also like the message in it. It's interesting. This is totally straightforward. There's no clown shit. There's no circus shit. It's just a real song about the bullshit that you encounter on a day to day.
Man, let me tell you, this song is fantastic.
It is.
This song is straight up fantastic. It's a very chill beat to start out with. The hook is great. Let's see.
How many times will I ask myself why? How many times will I cry? Yeah.
It was a treat. Every single time I listened to this album and this song came on, it was a goddamn treat. And it is the second longest song in the album.
Is it?
It is too short, in my opinion.
It's good. It's a good track. My favorite part is, and it's something I think about all the time. Anytime I'm stopped in traffic on the highway and there's an accident, and I've encountered this, he talks about, you know, being stopped in traffic and, you know, there's an accident. I hope nobody died, you know, but people are gawking, going by really slow, trying to see if they can see, you know, dead bodies or something. Finally get there and the wreck is on the other side and people are just sick because they're trying to see what they can see. It's like,
right.
There's a certain reality to that concept. And it was something I'd never really considered before until you start encountering it and you're like, oh shit. Yeah, that is a thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's one lyric I wrote down here. I wrote the book. I was out robbing liquor stores when you were just a nut stain in your mama's drawers. So they still had the good, clever, funny lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I hate the fact that I love all the songs that aren't about clown shit, but I can't help the fact that I love all the songs that aren't about fucking clown shit. No,
this one hits hard as hell. I love the line where he says, how many times will you honk your horn and say, fuck you? Now, what the fuck does that do? You feel better now? I didn't let you pass. How about I stop my car and beat your fucking ass?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I feel like that sometimes.
Dude, for sure. I 100% feel like that. Probably too often.
Talk about all the time. Can we talk about the skit at the end, though? Because I think it's the best skit on the record.
Oh, personally. Yeah. Let's talk. So, okay. So the song, the last minute of the song is this ending skit. So yes. Talk it up. What do we got?
So you've got a bunch of kids talking about being gangbangers. And they're, you know, this kid, I peel caps all day long, motherfucker. I'm the big wheel cap peeler. Like he's talking and he's like, you know, trying to get these other two kids to like be in a gang with him, talking about how hard he can be. And right. Then all of a sudden you hear this kid's mom call him and he's like, oh, guys, I have to go. And he leaves. And one of the kids goes, I hope he doesn't get in trouble. And the other kid goes, yeah, then we couldn't be gangbangers.
That's what, dude.
It's so good.
I'm good to move on to the next song, though, if you are.
Yeah, let's move on.
Southwest Voodoo, baby.
Southwest Voodoo. Man, I love this beat, too. And that bass line is sick.
Bass line was super cool. Beat was amazing. Faygo reference number 2, which I should have called out the first one, is in Hocus Pocus, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Also, one of the most well-known Faygo lines. As a matter of fact, we played a show with These Streets one time, and they had a mosh call, a break before a mosh, mm-hmm. and he goes, trunk full of Faygo, car full of fat chicks. And I was like, "What? Wait, what just fucking happened right now?" It was awesome.
That's incredible. Yeah, dude. We played a show with These Streets as well. They have some. Was good it the same one? Shit.
Was that J&J's?
Maybe.
I kind of feel like you guys were there. I feel like I remember talking to River there, but I don't know. Anyway, Southwest Voodoo.
The song was okay. You know, it wasn't coming off of how many times. You know, it's coming off a song that's so as good and as serious and as how many times is and as heartfelt as that one is, it's hard to follow that up.
I almost think you need to put a fun track like Southwest Voodoo that's not heavy after it, especially when the next song that's coming is Halls of Illusion. So, but yeah. It's how are you going to follow up how many times is tough.
It's really tough. not much else for me to talk about on this song other than the skit at the end.
Okay. Yeah, it's a swinging on the trapeze and somebody falling to their death.
Right.
There's one line I want to point out in Southwest Voodoo. We talked about it several episodes ago. There was a line in a song and you were like, I love the part where Shaggy 2 Dope says, I'll make a voodoo doll of you and flick your nuts. And I was like, they're going to sample that in another song in the future. And it's in this yes, song.
Yes, it was sampled in this song. You're correct.
Yep. So we've got that skit at the end with the people oohing and awing at the person on the trapeze and then the person falling to their death. And as it ends, it starts right into Halls of Illusions ticket. Please, thanks, walk through the door. And it's like, okay, this is an interesting way to start a track.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting way to start. The beat comes in super hard, and I loved that.
So this was the lead single from the album. It had a video. The song was on the commercials all over the place. I think the guitars feel like a lot, but I mean, if you got fucking Slash on your album, I mean, I guess go for it. I don't know.
Yeah, if you could get Slash on your album, throw him in the listener's face.
Yeah, let him do his thing, you know? Yeah.
So I do agree with you on that one.
It's got a lot of really serious social commentary. It speaks out heavily against domestic violence, drug use, bigotry, and more. You know, it's a decent song. I dig it. I think this was the famous track off of this album.
I didn't realize it was the first single. It makes sense that it was the first single. It's not a bad song. I just didn't have much to say about it, honestly.
I think a track like this might be part of the reason people tend to refer to them, because this was the first song many people ever heard from them, but tend to refer to them as rap metal, which I do not think at any point in their careers they are a rap metal act. They don't have the persona, the look, the sound, but because it's guitar heavy and they featured Slash on it, okay, I get it.
Right. I mean, the first impression that somebody gets of a band will stick with them a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So shall we move on to track 8, Under the Moon?
Under the Moon.
No, that's not how it...
Sorry. Yeah. I'm still thinking Disney stuff.
So this track was missing from the original Hollywood release. Disney objected to the reference to rape, even though that reference is not glorifying, justifying, or making light of it. As a matter of fact, it is the basis of the events that happen in the song. Somebody tries to rape his girlfriend and he kills that person.
The message of this song is very serious. I think Violent J, it's just yet another instance of Violent J telling a vivid story through song.
Yeah.
And he
a very
did a great
dark
job
story. Yeah. It's a sad story, a dark story.
Beat and production were incredible. I heavily enjoyed it. Honestly, it's a very serious song. It's something that you can't believe these people, you know, that this artist also wrote some of the other shit that they wrote. It's like a 180. You can get whiplash. If you put ICP on like their entire discography on shuffle, you could get whiplash between their songs very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, even on this album, going from a very serious, like well put together, dark, you know, heavy song like Under the Moon that actually presents a really interesting scenario to a dumb as fuck song like the next one, What is a Juggalo?
Yeah. Don't really have much more to say about it other than just I love Violent J's storytelling abilities.
Agree. I think it's a great track. Again, no clown shit, no circus shit, just him telling a real, I mean, I don't want to say real story. It's fictional story, but a more straightforward story. So For sure. good there.
So, okay. So let's go ahead and hop into the next song then, which is What is a Juggalo?
Well, here it goes. This is the true beginning, I believe, of Juggalo culture and the sort of hard branding of Juggalo. I don't know, man. It's a funny track. It's a stupid song. I like that they start the track with a bunch of samples from all their previous songs where they more inadvertently or accidentally use the term Juggla or Juggalo. I think that's cool. I don't know about this track, man.
Yeah, it's... something. So it's just describing what a juggalo is. There's tons of funny lyrics in here. Verse one, what is a juggalo? Let me think for a second. Well, oh, he gets butt naked. Then he walks through the streets, winking at the freaks with a 2 liter stuck in his butt cheeks. You know? Yeah. And it's literally just, this is where you get fucking whiplash from yes. Under the Moon to What is a Juggalo. This is exactly, you don't even have to shuffle yes. this album to get whiplash.
There is one line or interaction in this song that I think is among their best, most clever, well executed. Mm-hmm. And first I'll say the second verse is superior to the first verse across the board, but there's a point where Violent J is talking about, you know, things that juggalos do, and they're usually referring to themselves. And when they're saying, what is a juggalo, they're not saying, here's what people that are juggalos do. They're referring to themselves as juggalos.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I'll eat Monopoly and shit out Connect Four. And then Shaggy starts rapping. He goes, wait, what the fuck? Connect Four. And Violent J goes, don't worry about my shit, motherfucker. Just rap.
Just rap.
It really works.
So I absolutely love when they do shit like that, where one of them will step outside of the box right. and break the fourth wall, if you will, and say, like, what the fuck? Connect Four. That shit is whack.
It was good. I think that worked really well.
I think it did. Hard juggalo branding, but pretty fucking good just for the comedic value, honestly.
It is. It's funny. It's funny.
So let's go ahead and move on then to track number 10, House of Horrors.
Yeah. I think this is a sick beat. I think that bass line is fucking dope. If you're listening like in the car and you got subs, that bass line, that's a sick bass line.
Super sick bass line. The production was great.
Yep.
Loved the Nell Carter reference was funny.
Do you like Nell Carter? No.
No.
Good.
Because you won't find her here. Not a lot stood out with me in this song, if I'm being honest.
You know, I didn't ever realize it before, but now that we're listening in this way, in order, I'm realizing how similar this is to My Funhouse on Ringmaster conceptually.
Yeah, I could see that.
But done better. I think it's done better. There's one line that I've always loved, and it's when Violent J does this thing, and he goes, what does that mean? It doesn't mean nothing, but it scared you because people don't be doing that shit. But me, I'm all about it. And I was like, that's weird. Like, who would think to put that line in a fucking song?
Yeah, so that was something else. One line that I wanted to point out before we moved on. Guess what? I'm a serial killer. It's a bad habit. I killed Tony Lucky Charms, the silly rabbit. So he's saying cereal and then also the food cereal.
Breakfast cereal. Yeah.
Breakfast cereal. Pretty, so that was pretty,
that's,
I mean,
clever.
That
it's good. Good wordplay.
That wordplay and word association is a very common one between cereal and cereal. But, you know, I can appreciate it. Let's go ahead and move on to the next song. Boogie Woogie Woo, baby.
Yeah, this is another one that was removed from the original Hollywood release. Apparently, Disney was not cool with a song about killing children. So,
You know, it's funny how those things work. I loved the sample in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's from a movie that was released in 1970 called I Drink Your Blood.
Hell yes.
Great sample. I'm not really a fan of this one.
No.
It's okay.
I think the beat is pretty sick. I like the background vocals. I think the flows and production are awesome. But it is kind of just a weird song. It's a for fun song, I think, which is okay. They can do that. There's a couple good lines. It's goofy. It is a goofy song. But one of the lines I like the best that gets stuck in my head is they're – Violent J is talking about being the boogeyman, and he's, you know, literally what is in the shadows or in your closet or under your bed at night, and he sneaks out and kills kids, whatever. But he talks about killing this kid, and he goes, the cops do the best they can. They pull the axe out your face and say, was it the boogeyman? What was he wearing? And I was like, that's a pretty funny line.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's just yet another line that shows the cops are useless. It's, you're right. It's a fun song. But at this point, if you're releasing, you know, an album that's 16 songs, an hour and 7 minutes, dude, cut this song down to like, I don't know. It doesn't really need to be there, in my opinion.
It was removed from the original release, like I said. And
right.
I was used to listening to the album without these three songs, without Under the Moon, Boogie Woogie Woo, and Ned and Game. And even though I've heard them, it's almost a little bit strange still to hear them. There's something that feels a little bit new or different about it, even though obviously right. I heard them quite a bit. I think that I really like musically this track. I don't think it has anything important to say. I think it's just them being ridiculous. It's like a horror movie. Right. But there you go. I don't know. I don't have anything much more. It's about the boogeyman. It's got a dope beat. That's it.
Yeah, that works. You know, can I ask you something?
Yes.
Would you like the album better or worse if they left these three songs off permanently? Because you were able to listen to it without the three songs and now with the three songs.
I actually do believe that I liked it better without those three songs. There was a flow to the album that worked better for me. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't hate any of these three songs, I think Under the Moon is the strongest one. If I was only going to put one on, that's the one I would put on the album. I think the Ned and Game is funny, but Boogie Woogie Woo and Ned and Game almost added too much humor to it for me. But again,
also added 8.5 minutes of humor.
Yes.
To this,
which they do well. Ned and Game is funnier than Boogie Woogie Woo.
Yeah. Ned and Game is, if I were to only leave one off, it would definitely be Boogie Woogie Woo. Now, yeah, if I true. Were to listen to this album without the three, mm-hmm. I fully think that, like you said, it would flow a lot better. Under the Moon is a fantastic song. And mm-hmm. if I knew it existed, I would miss it
yeah.
a lot from this album. But at the same time, you can't argue that it doesn't kind of bring the energy down a little bit.
It does. It definitely does.
Of the whole album. So yeah. I get, stylistically, that would probably be why it was fine to take it off. Obviously, they took it off because of the themes. But stylistically, I feel like the album would definitely flow better without these three songs. But like I said, I like the album, so I'm not really going to complain that they're in here.
Yeah, now. Again, so. These three songs are not bad. But speaking of these three songs, shall we move on to track 12, The Ned and Game?
Yes, The Ned and Game, back to back. Like yeah. I said, 8.5 minutes of just being stupid and hilarious.
Yes.
Well, 4 minutes and 5 seconds of being hilarious, 4.5 minutes of being stupid. But Ned and Game. The intro skit was good. I yeah. loved it. It was fantastic.
It's like the dating game, but yes. with just two contestants, Bachelor number one and Bachelor number two, trying to win the Nedden of one lucky woman or unlucky.
Yes, of Sharon. Now, so contestant number one is Violent J. And it's just him saying, this whole song is them saying things that obviously like are the exact opposite of what you should do. You
right.
know what I mean?
There is they are absolutely portraying the most horrible potential bachelors that you could get on the dating game. Like,
oh, yeah.
if you could say all the most wrong things, this is the person that they're portraying. Funny.
It's like playing a game that's like, pick the worst thing you could do. Like, if this situation presented itself, pick the worst thing you could do. Oh, you made, you upset her mom and her dad got pissed. Do you apologize? No, I'll just walk up and punch him in the lips.
Yeah.
But
when,
yeah,
when
so,
you're sitting down to dinner, do you do and say inappropriate things to her little brother and sister? Apparently so.
So yes, they the lyrics in this song, there is a definitely some pedophilia. One line at least said, I'm steady staring at your sister. I'll tell you this, you know, for only 13, she got some big tits. Violent J changes that number to 26 recently when performing the song live, which is probably related to the fact that he has a daughter that's around 13 years old.
Yeah, probably.
But also related to the fact that this is disgusting. And I'm sure he knows that.
This is probably a risky conversation to have. But I think when you compare the line in this song to the line in Lil Something Something, where he talks about having sex with somebody that couldn't be a day over 15, there is a certain context and awareness in this song. And I'm going to say that the sexualization of a minor is wrong, not something that's cool. But I think there's awareness in that. I think he's saying it knowing this is wrong, and you're supposed to both cringe and laugh, which I think is the result. Versus in Lil Something Something, there's almost a glorification around it conceptually. And I think they're very different. I'm not saying it's necessarily cool, but I also think they know it's not cool, and that's why he said it, if that makes sense.
Well, that's what they're saying, the worst things in this song. Like, the theme of this song is to say the worst, most fucked up things.
Oh, still bad. I'm not saying better.
Still,
I'm just saying it's different.
It's true. It's different.
Yeah.
Glad that he knows to change the lyric now.
Yeah.
Wish he would have just said 18. You know, like, if you want to go young, just say 18. But that was around,
Just leave that. At the time, I will tell you, at the time, I don't remember anybody questioning that and going, well, that's super, super wrong. I mean, we knew it was wrong, but we just were like, that's funny that he's saying something wrong.
Yeah.
And I think there's a different awareness now going, oof, that's a really difficult line, you know?
Yeah, it's like that. You're right. I mean, back when it was released, that was one of those, holy shit, that's fucked up.
Now yeah, exactly.
Like, now it's like, ooh, yikes, that's fucked up.
Joke about that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then after talking about that, the dad gets mad yet again. And this time Violent J will bring out a gun and put it up against his chin. So that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's what dad deserves.
Yeah. Fuck him. Absolutely. Yeah. For sticking up for his daughter, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
So this whole song is just them trying to win over Sharon's affections. And it's hilarious. Yeah. There's some great lines.
I love the Captain Caveman reference.
Yeah, I could literally close my eyes and point to the lyrics on my screen right now, and I will land on a funny line.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Hallelujah.
Now this one is really interesting because it will go on to become a recurring theme, where ICP is talking out specifically against crooked preachers and churches in general. This is the first track where they are really overt about it. And this one not only goes after crooked preachers and evangelists, but how crooked the church is as a business in general, exploiting people's faith for money. And I'm there for it, man. I'm about this.
Oh, yeah. Content-wise, this song was fantastic.
Yeah.
As somebody who grew up, you know, religious in a religious family who is not anymore. That is, I'm not anymore. My family is still very religious. But so the opening skit was great. It's the concept of a televangelist using religious faith to scam people out of their money, which happens all over the place. Content-wise, the song was fantastic.
There's a sample where, and actually it might not be a sample. It might be Legs Diamond or somebody doing the voice, but he says, you know, I want you to give God the first portion of your income. The first portion, because if you, you know, pay everything else and give God a little bit of what's left, well, that's what God's going to give back to you. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that's a real line, because it sounds like a sample. And if somebody who claimed to be a person of faith really said something like that, that's so despicable.
Dude, there's times when I was growing up in church where you could tell, like, they definitely did sermons around, I guess, so little background information. I grew up when we first moved here. We went to this podunk little church. All of a sudden, the area around us grew up, so the church grew up to the point where, by the time I was in high school, middle school, early high school, it was a mass. It was a Southern Baptist mega church.
Yeah.
With a brand new, brand spanking new facility, huge worship center, blah blah blah. And you could tell that they let finances drive what they were, the preacher was going to talk about that Sunday. Mm-hmm. If donations and tithing were dipping, you would know that because all of a sudden God told him to start talking about tithing.
Of course.
And yeah, of course. No, God didn't tell you to talk about fucking tithing. That motorcycle that you drove in, the brand new fucking Jeep that your daughter drove in, the fucking Corvette that your son and, your wife came in together. That's what, wanted to tell you to talk about tithing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Your accountant.
Yeah.
Your accountant was the God speaking to you.
Exactly. So church is bullshit. And I'm glad that they made a song like this because it definitely, content wise, was the best song, I think, in my
opinion. I also love the wordplay hallelujah. It feels like such an obvious one, but I swear I never saw it before this.
Yeah, no, I was the same way. I never saw it before this, and I was like, damn, that should have been like, that should be something I see all the time.
Now I realized something interesting listening now. Again, I told you I had listened to ICP a lot back in the day, and that an album like Riddlebox was influential on me. I didn't realize sometimes influences seep in, sneak into your brain, get in there, and you don't know where they come from. I'm listening to this song, and I got to the bridge where they're saying, pass the collection plate, and I was like, oh, fuck. The end of the song Avarice on the new Hollowed Out record is literally me saying, pass the collection plate, pass the collection plate. And I was like, damn.
Hell yeah.
That came from somewhere. That came from here.
They're influential. Oh,
I didn't even realize it.
that's hilarious. That's great. so let's move on here to the next song, which is Down with the Clown. My first note, so I took these notes the very first time I listened to this. My first note is, I promise you I'm not going to like this song.
And?
And it was okay. nice flows. It was not bad.
So I have to wonder, now that, I mean, because of the way you're hearing this album, you have listened from everything from their earliest recordings all the way up to now. It starts out with them saying, this one goes out to the ninjas that have been down since Carnival of Carnage. Nah, fuck that. Since Dog Beats. Nah, fuck that. Since Basement Cuts. That's you, man.
That's me. I do. And when I was hearing it, I was like, yo, that, fuck yeah, that's me. That's me. That's me.
Yeah.
Now that's me 20 something years late, 30 something years late, but right, it's still me.
At the time that this came out, you couldn't just go listen to those records, though. They weren't on Spotify. That wasn't a thing. So you had to just really know.
This went out to like the 2,000 people in Detroit that knew about them since Basement Cuts, basically.
Exactly. Like, I didn't know what the fuck Basement Cuts was. I had heard some songs from Dog Beats, but that was it.
Yeah.
The song is stupid, but I do like that there is something behind it. They're talking about the fleeting nature of fame. Don't forget us like you did with Menudo and like you did with Rob Bass and all these other, flash in the pan artists that were big for a second and now nobody gives a fuck. The song musically is kind of like musically kind of fun and goofy, but that chorus musically hits hard. That's hard as hell. I love the music for the chorus.
The chorus was fantastic. I don't love this song, but I gotta say I was wrong when I thought that I was gonna hate it, because I don't hate it either. It's fine. No. It seemed very much so like a Juggalo anthem to me.
Yeah,
One of those classic Juggalo anthems.
This was definitely the point in their career where that was starting to become a thing, where they were getting a following. So I get it.
Well, and so to track back to the whole "Don't Forget Me" kind of thing and the fleeting nature of fame. every single person that puts out music or even any content of that matter has this thought.
I
think about it constantly. What if everybody forgets about Ballista and forgets about this EP that we put out by the time live shows start happening again? Every time I'm not streaming for a couple days, I think, it's very selfish, and a lot of people that create art and content think this way. But if somebody's not watching me stream, if one of my subscribers is not watching me stream, they're watching somebody else stream. And I don't like that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's just paranoia is what it is. You know, what if all this hard work that I've done to put into this thing I'm passionate about gets forgotten about too soon?
Yeah, and I think this is a very ICP thing to do. They make a song that on the surface doesn't seem like it has any meaning, but when you take a second to listen beyond the surface, you go, oh, there's actually an emotion here. There's something they're saying. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you get some feeling for sure.
Do I like this song? I don't know if I like this song, but do I hate this song? No, absolutely not. It does have the return of the Suicide Hotline skit at the end, which is, again, hilarious and also not funny at all.
Yeah. No, so I wrote that down, too. I said, Suicide Hotline came back. Nice.
it's pretty funny.
It was pretty good. Let's go ahead and move on to the second-to-last song, which is
15.
Just Like That.
Short track.
Very dope short track. Comes in at a minute 24. Faygo reference number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Still sporting the same drawers, even though they hurt. In the fridge, there's a Faygo. It tastes ill because it's flatter than a bitch on a big wheel.
I guess that's an yeah. Why not?
I don't know why a bitch being on a classic 90s children's toy can. What's the word I'm trying to say? Why are they flat? Because
she's a child.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a full-grown adult woman on a big wheel.
No, I think he's talking about it's flat because children.
Well, at least this child doesn't have tits in this song.
Oh, my God. This is an interesting song to me because I feel like it leads into track 16, the last song.
Absolutely.
It lulls you into a false sense of security. He's going to go out with Shaggy and Mike Clark, and they're going to go hang with these girls and whatever. And as he's waiting for the car to pull up, it's not Shaggy and Mike Clark. It's somebody that shoots him and he dies, and it leads into the next song.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, so I wrote down, I really wish this song was longer.
Yeah. It's cool, right?
It's a cool ass song. I liked it a lot. Yeah, unfortunately it was not. And we had to cut it. You know what? If I found out that they cut down this song for time because of Boogie Woogie Woo was being too long, I would fucking rage. I would be pissed.
I highly doubt that's the case,
but
I'd be willing to bet if anything, 15 and 16 might have initially been one track and they split it.
That very well could be it. Because 16 is actually the longest song, coming in at 6:41.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the last song. It basically picks up from Violent J getting killed. It's about, I assume, making sure you live a good life that assures that you go to heaven when you die. And I think there's some genuine heart in this track. It's a little bit dumb, but it kind of works.
Yeah, it works.
It's a little long, but it's the last track.
A lot of long, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a break before the outro, which I think is kind of cool.
Yes.
So I'll sort of forgive some of that.
I think the outro was far too long.
I agree.
I'll fucking say it.
I agree. There's a line in here that I have a question about.
Yes.
So you die, you go to, they don't say the word Shangri-La here, but they do say it in the intro. And in the Juggalo mythology, the fictitious Shangri-La and Hell's Pit are the heaven and hell. They are where the good souls and bad souls go when you die, whatever. Yes. But in Shangri-La, they are meeting people who had died. They talk about Elvis and things like that. But Selena, Eazy-E, I think they talk about.
Yeah.
But at one point, Shaggy talks about seeing one of his friends that died in the drag. And I can't help but wonder if the wording, if he references to him a man dressing in women's clothes, drag queen fashion, or if he's talking about in a drag race.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so instead of always giving each other pile drivers, I see my old homie, he died in a drag, chilling with two bitches. What's up, Shags?
Yeah.
You know, there's very little context clues to figure out which one is which. You know, or which it is, rather.
I like to think of it as his friend died literally in drag.
I agree. I think that would be a lot cooler than racing a stupid car.
Yeah. Or maybe both. Maybe both.
Yeah. Oh, hey, a drag race. RuPaul's drag race.
Is that a thing? Are drag races a real thing? Because if not, they fucking should be.
They absolutely should be. And I want to get to the bottom of this.
Hell yeah.
So the outro is way too long. Other than that, I liked it. Faygo reference number 4. Legs Diamond is super good in the chorus.
Yep.
But yeah, like you said, that's the album.
That's the album.
That's the fucking album. So without further ado, let's keep it moving along here. We knew we were going to have a long one today.
But hey, we're back after a few weeks off.
You know
it's okay
what?
For there to be a long one.
Yeah, you have suffered not hearing our voices for 3 gosh darn weeks. You can sit through a long episode.
Hell yeah.
Favorite tracks. I have a clear-cut favorite.
I don't know. I have 2 that are kind of up there for me. What's yours? You have a clear-cut favorite.
So
what's
my
yours?
Clear-cut favorite, and I know it's a vibe killer, but how many times?
So my number 1 and 2 are How Many Times and Under the Moon.
I think we should put How Many Times Under the Moon then, honestly.
Do it. Go for it.
Let's do it. So let me pull up the playlist here.
Yes.
Let's go How Many Times, Add to Playlist, ICUP with Wii, and Under the Moon, Add to Playlist, ICUP with Wii. We are sitting at 22 songs, 1 hour, 50 minutes.
This is getting to be a real playlist.
This is
getting
real. To be a take some time out of your fucking day to listen kind of playlist.
Hell yeah.
And I think it's a solid one too. So there goes our 2 songs. You can check them out on the playlist. As always, you can find that playlist linked in our Twitter. Let's talk Faygo scores.
Let's talk Faygo scores. I do believe this album deserves some Faygos.
Oh, it deserves multiple in my opinion.
Yes.
Music and beats. I gave this a solid 4.5, honestly.
As did I.
Amazing. Lyrics and flows, I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 4.5.
Nice. Love it. Skits and interludes, I gave this a 4.5.
I also gave it a 4.5.
We clearly love this shit. We clearly love this shit. Vibe at time of release, weird because this is their what people would call quote-unquote rap metal album. But I still gave it a 4, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
I gave it a 5. This was clearly where they blew up. I think the vibe was right for them at the time.
So I think they blew up because of the controversy more. So I think they blew up because of the controversy, but they lasted because of the quality of the album. Does that make sense?
That's probably it. Yeah.
So that's why if they stuck with Hollywood Records, no controversy, and blew up still the way that they did, this would be a 5 for the vibes. I just think the controversy pushed them a little further than it would have if we were in that alternate reality where the Southern Baptist Church does not exist.
Yeah. Undeniable truths. But that brings the album. We're going to give this one 4.5 Faygos.
Hey, super solid. Congratulations, the great Malenko, for the 4.5 Faygos. Well deserved. Very well deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. This, this is a curious one. I'm really curious because I want to see what you think about the next several albums. There's some good stuff, but to me, this is their tipping point album. I think they start to shift in tone a bit from here.
I am pretty excited for it.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Now, because you've hyped up this being the tipping point, so mm-hmm. I have been just anxiously waiting to get to the point that we are at now to really get into the weeds with ICP.
But yes. The next episode is Forgotten Freshness Volumes 1 and 2. So we are actually taking a quick look back before we move ahead.
Yes, we are reminiscing slightly. 1998's Forgotten Freshness Volumes 1 and 2. A look back on the best of times and the worst of times before we move on into the next era, if you will, of ICP.
Yeah, this is a double album, so our review will only be of the tracks that have not previously been on albums we've talked about, which means that there's really about 15 tracks that will be new to us.
Yes.
There's a bunch of tracks we can just go. We talked about that on the, you know,
check it off.
The Ringmaster episode. We don't need to talk about it. Move on.
Correct. That's what's coming up next week. Until then, Eric, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @NuclearIsLonely.
And you can find me and all of my content at www.locklearcomedy.com. I stream on Twitch. I used to say that I stream Monday, Wednesday, Fridays on Twitch, but I've been streaming a lot more than that. Drop me a follow, twitch.tv/gristlemedia. I stream a lot of bullshit, and it's a good-ass time because we just talk and joke around the whole time. So drop me a follow there. You'll usually find me streaming most evenings. The podcast you can find on Twitter at ICUPWWE. That's where you can get our notifications on when episodes are up, as well as extra information and the link to our Spotify playlist.
That's all true.
I am Aaron. And for Eric, I'm just going to say a big old whoop whoop on out of here.
Whoop whoop.
Has been a Gristle Media production.
Uh-oh. Eric's lost. Hello? Hello? You there? Hello.